On the show today, ideas about who takes risks, especially when it comes to innovation. So think about someone like Steve Jobs for a minute. He's considered to be this brash inventor, the genius behind one of the most innovative consumer products of our time, the iPhone. But is that the whole story?
So the real question is, what makes the iPhone and similar phones today smart and not stupid?
This is economics professor Mariana Mazzucato.
And the answer is technologies like the internet, GPS, touchscreen, and Siri. And each and one of those technological changes were invested in by government. So it was DARPA, which is an innovation agency inside the Department of Defense, that invested in both the internet and Siri. It was the Navy that came up with GPS. And the touchscreen display received some early investments actually by the CIA. And what's then extraordinary is that the storytelling around those products, like the iPhone and Steve Jobs, just simply, you know, don't include that public sector, so government investment.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because there's a myth about entrepreneurs and inventors and, you know, sort of the titans of industry that we lionize, that they are brash, fearless risk takers. You know, they jump out of airplanes without parachutes. How much of that is true in your view?
So I don't even believe in entrepreneurs. I believe in entrepreneurial systems which allow certain individuals, organizations to really think out of the box. And so rather than mythologizing a person, the question is, how was that person or that organization able to really take on risk and even more than that, uncertainty, the real unknown? And in terms of the, if you want, myths around Silicon Valley and the entrepreneurs there, if you look at the system behind them, there was often a wave that they were able to literally surf. And that wave was actually created by the state.
Mariana Mazzucato picks up her idea from the TED stage.
Of course, the private sector does a lot, but the narrative that we've always been told is the state is important for the basics, but not really providing that sort of high-risk, revolutionary thinking out of the box. And all these sectors, from funding the internet to doing, you know, the spending, but also the envisioning, the strategic vision for these investments, it was actually coming within the state. And so there's huge implications of this. First of all, by constantly depicting the state part as, you know, necessary, but actually a bit boring and often a bit dangerous, kind of Leviathan, I think we've actually really stunted the possibility to build these public-private partnerships in a really dynamic way. Even the words that we often use to justify the P part, the public part, well, they're both P's, with public-private partnerships is in terms of de-risking. What the public sector did in all these examples I just gave you, and there's many more, which myself and other colleagues have been looking at, is doing much more than de-risking. It's kind of been taking on that risk, bring it on. It's actually been the one thinking out of the box.
When we think about the U.S. government, right, the U.S. government has a massive budget. And so when the U.S. government makes bets, invests money in technologies, is it really that risky?
Sure it is. I mean, for every internet, there was many attempts to, you know, at other solutions that didn't then go well. So innovation in and of itself implies actually, you know, risk-taking, and, you know, most attempts at innovation actually go wrong. And in fact, many innovations happen not so much by mistake, but, you know, on the way to searching for one thing, you actually discover something else.
Right.
So there's quite a bit of also serendipity. But the real question is whether the patience and the long-termism that a government can provide, you know, is that better for innovation or worse? So if you look at how venture capital is structured, it's very exit-driven. They tend to want to exit in 3 or 5 years through an IPO, an initial public offering, or a buyout. That exit-driven model has actually really hurt the evolution of science and innovation in sectors like biotechnology. Hmm. So really, this mix of being able to think big, be mission-oriented, try to think of, like, the big problems of our time, whether it was going to the moon and back again in one generation, as in the 1960s, whether it's today solving, you know, really battling it out with climate change or getting the plastic out of the ocean, how to frame those problems as inspirationally as possible, use public investment to go after the problems, but especially in order to crowd in, to excite other forms of investment.
Yeah. So, I mean, is there a way to think about all of the technologies and innovations we interact with on a day-to-day basis and kind of figure out how much of the things we rely on actually started as a result of a government initiative?
Well, there's definitely data out there. And I think in some cases, for example, with medicine, there's very good data. In the case of, again, of companies, I mean, we know, you know, Tesla, extremely innovative company, but, you know, Elon Musk for his three companies, SpaceX, SolarCity, and Tesla, received close to $5 billion U.S. dollars in the combination of subsidies, grants, guarantees, and other types of investments. And that data is out there. And it shouldn't be out there then to accuse someone like Elon Musk of not being innovative. He is. But, you know, admitting this massive collective and systemic and social nature of the structure around you, which then allowed you to succeed, I think should be an obligation.
Yeah.
And so kind of having that more part of the popular discourse, I think, would really change how we perceive the role of government, but also the pressure on governments to be investing in those really transformative areas, which we as a society perhaps believe will be important.
What would a better system look like? I mean, if the government is funding technology that is making lots of people rich, right, and the government essentially is taking on the initial risk but not getting the reward from it, what would a better system look like? I mean, should the U.S. government function as a private equity firm or a venture capital firm?
So the government should not act as a private equity or venture capital firm, because then it would itself start to become short-termist and just think about financial return. So
right.
The real challenge is how to remain focused on the big problems. Again, the equivalent of the Apollo 11 kind of project today, solving some of the most wicked problems of our time around health and climate. And that will entail taking risks. Taking
right.
risks. Why? Taking risks because you know that in order to invest in some of the technological and also sometimes organizational and social innovation that's required for these big transitions to occur, it's not easy. It's very difficult. You might and very likely will fail along the way. So all this for me means that the approach to policy and to government, you know, just has to fundamentally change to one where we admit explicitly that you're co-creating and co-shaping markets in a risk-taking way. And thus, we also have to make sure that we're governing that system in a way that actually achieves societal value.
That's Mariana Mazzucato. She's an economics professor at University College London. You can see her full talk at TED.com. Hey, thanks for listening to our show on risk this week. If you want to find out more about who was on it, go to TED.npr.org. And to see hundreds more TED Talks, check out TED.com or the TED app. Our production staff at NPR includes Jeff Rogers, Sanaz Meshkinpour, Neva Grant, Casey Herman, Rachel Faulkner, Deba Motasham, James Delahousie, J.C. Howard, Maria Paz Gutierrez, Katie Monteleone, and Carrie Thompson, with help from Daniel Shukin. Our intern is Kiara Brown. Our partners at TED are Chris Anderson, Colin Helms, Anna Phelan, and Michelle Quint. I'm Guy Raz, and you've been listening to Ideas Worth Spreading right here on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.